So it's pretty clear the Bible has fed both freedom movements and also appalling brutality. What if we had a book of chapter and verse with all the good stuff in the Bible, the poetry, the wisdom, the moral guidance, without the baggage that comes with religious doctrine? It might sound something like this.
Sages, chapter 1. How does the master learn? By being gentle, kind, courteous, modest, and patient. Such inquiry is different from all others. What is a good person? One who doesn't seek to be satiated in eating, one who is quick in dealings, prudent in speech, correct in action. At 15, I aspired to learning. At 30, I established my stand. At 40, I had no illusions. At 50, I knew my destiny. At 60, I recognized truth when it came. At 70, I could follow my heart's wishes without wrongdoing.
That's philosopher A.C. Grayling reading from his Humanist Bible, which he's called The Good Book. Steve Paulson caught up with him recently to talk about the philosophy behind humanism.
Now, you have a new book called The God Argument, which is a kind of manifesto against religion and for humanism. What does it mean to be a humanist?
It means really having an attitude, because humanism is not a code or a doctrine or a set of teachings. Rather, it's an invitation to start thinking about how one might live a flourishing and worthwhile life, a life of achievement, by thinking a bit about what it is to be a human being.
So what are the core differences between being a humanist and being a religious person?
Well, the chief difference is that most of the great religious moralities are what are sometimes called divine command moralities. There is a law, a moral law, a code, a set of commandments, thou shalt not. And they ask us to submit our will and our judgment to the deity. For example, Islam means submission. In Christianity, a very common theme is not my will, but thy will be done. This is very contrasted, really, to the humanist outlook, which says we must, as individuals, take responsibility for ourselves, and we have to think about how we're going to live if we're to live well.
Now, you actually describe yourself as a humanist, a secularist, and an atheist, and each one of those words has a different meaning. Can you briefly define each?
Yes, indeed. And it's important, actually, that one does distinguish between the three, because there are three different debates, even though they're also naturally connected, obviously. The atheism-theism debate is really a metaphysical one. What is the universe like? Does it contain supernatural or transcendent agencies of some kind? The secularism debate is about the place and volume of the religious voice in the public square and how much influence religious lobbies should have in education, public policy matters, and in scientific research. And the third debate is the ethical debate. What is the basis of trying to live with responsibility towards others? How do we form good relationships? And what things really matter in life?
My sense is your critique of the Bible goes a lot further than just you don't find it meaningful. I mean, you actively dislike this book, don't you?
Well, there are certainly very unedifying parts of it and some downright disgraceful parts of it. So a good deal of massacring goes on in the Old Testament as a result of the annoyance that the deity feels towards his creation. But there are also, of course, very beautiful passages and very illuminating ones. My favourite bit is the Song of Solomon, which, of course, is a love poem, and it's a very beautiful and moving one. There is wisdom in the Proverbs and in Ecclesiastes. What I disagree with, I suppose, is the idea that our view of the world, both on a factual basis, an empirical basis, and our view of how we're to live our lives, tends to be both distorted by different religious takes on these things, the different religious traditions, and so many conflicts arise out of them because different groups of people think that their gods or their version of God have told them things that are different from other people's.
So religion has a lot to answer for in your mind, especially when it comes to violence.
It does. I think religion, if one were to balance up on the one hand the inspiration it's given in the way of art and music, the comfort it's given to individuals on their own in the dark at the end of life in moments of terror, if one balances that with the overall weight of religion on history, on human history, I think the balance has been very largely negative.
And yet, if we're just going to focus on violence for a moment, as you look back at the worst episodes of violence of the 20th century, you'd have to say most of them were caused by atheists. Stalin, Mao, Pol Pot. There's an argument about Hitler, of course, whether he was actually an atheist, but none of them were religious believers. In fact, some of them were, most of those were avowed atheists.
Well, this is a dreadful canard which is trotted out at every opportunity, really, isn't it? I mean, these things weren't done in the name of atheism.
No, of course not.
Hitler wasn't an atheist. And also, the point about Stalinism and Nazism and Mao and any Calvinist church you care to name, or Islam in Muslim-majority countries where there's a particularly fundamentalist version of it, they all share one thing in common. They are all totalizing ideologies. They will say, we know the answer, we've got the truth. And if you don't toe the line, you're in big trouble. And they have more in common in that way than they have differences.
Now, you have done something quite audacious, I have to say. You've written your own Bible, a humanist Bible, what you call the Good Book, which is actually full of books and verses. Why did you want to do this?
Well, firstly, I should say that I didn't write it. I made it. About 30 or more years ago, when I was a graduate student at Oxford, I was thinking a bit about the rather interesting contrast between religious moralities and humanist moralities. And I thought to myself, well, it's such a great pity, really, that the makers of the religious Bible went to a great variety of texts and wove them into one another and paraphrased them and redacted them and edited them. But I thought it was a great pity that they went to religious texts rather than to the philosophers and historians and poets, because they would have been able to draw from them wonderful texts of insight and inspiration and consolation, of understanding of what it is to be human. And they could have put together a very, very different book.
So that's what your book is? It's actually a collection of what various people have written?
Exactly. So what I did was I went to all these great texts of the past and I performed on them the same act as the Bible makers performed, that is, selecting, editing, interweaving, and so forth. And I constructed it in the same way as the Bible of Religion, that is, in chapter and verse. I think that those great insights and inspirations from the secular writings of the world have every bit as much power and depth as the religious writings do, if indeed not more. And I wanted to present the book in the same way to show that it is entitled to sit on the same shelf, or even indeed maybe supplant what's on that shelf.
Well, good luck in that regard.
Well, give me a couple of centuries. You never know. I may myself be a god then, you know.
Well,
I certainly hope not, by the way. I'll be a very bad one.
Give us a taste. And we should point out that you actually start your humanist Bible with a book called Genesis, your story of the origins. Can you read some from that?
I certainly will, yes. And good book begins also in a garden, but a slightly different garden from the Garden of Eden, and it goes like this. Genesis chapter 1. In the garden stands a tree. In springtime it bears flowers, in the autumn fruit. Its fruit is knowledge, teaching the good gardener how to understand the world. From it he learns how the tree grows from seed to sapling, from sapling to maturity, at last ready to offer more life, and from maturity to age and sleep, whence it returns to the elements of things. It was from the fall of a fruit from such a tree that new inspiration came for inquiry into the nature of things. When Newton sat in his garden and saw what no one had seen before, that an apple draws the earth to itself and the earth the apple. So all things are gathered into one thing, the universe of nature, in which there are many worlds, the orbs of light in an immensity of space and time, and among them they are satellites, on one of which is part of nature that mirrors nature in itself, and can ponder its beauty and significance, and seek to understand it. This is humankind.
That's A.C. Grayling reading from his humanist Bible, which he calls The Good Book. He also talked with Steve Paulson about his new book, The God Argument,